The Times, I'm Marty Moscoane. Intelligence is not always easy to quantify. There's IQ, which covers general intelligence, but doesn't capture the full range of someone's smarts. I've been intrigued by the work of psychologist Howard Gardner and his theory of multiple intelligences. There's some new interesting research on something called fluid intelligence that's challenging some of the conventional wisdom about intelligence and memory, learning, and cognition. Our guest Dan Hurley decided to research the researchers and become a kind of human guinea pig. He took tests, he played games, he meditated, he exercised, he learned to play the lute, he even got his brain zapped. He wrote about his experiences and his findings in his new book called Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. Dan Hurley is a science writer whose work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and Neurology Today, and he joins us in our Philadelphia studio, and nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Dan, I want to begin at the end of your book where you describe being a slow learner in school. You describe being in third grade and you didn't know how to read yet.
Yeah. You know, I think most people think of a science reporter. If you write about science, gee, you must
be really smart.
Yeah. And especially if you wrote a book about called Smarter. When I was in third grade, my teacher came over to me once and said, read this word. And she pointed to it, and I said, "Tahi." And she said, "No, that's the." And I, at that point, learned for the first time how to read the word the. I still couldn't read. And I was considered a slow learner. Within a year, though, my best friend discovered Spider-Man comic books and started reading them and writing them, and I started reading them and writing them and doing my best. And by sixth grade, I was a straight-A student and, went on to doing pretty well here. So I've always wondered what the heck actually happened back then. Did I get smarter? Did reading comics uncover the intelligence that was already there? And so I was really intrigued when I started learning about this area of research.
So you were truly rescued by a superhero, yes?
I think I was.
but even looking back, do you think you had some kind of I don't want to be too prescriptive here, but some kind of undiagnosed learning disability? Were you bored?
I really don't know. My family had a lot of things going on. My parents got divorced. I was the youngest of five. I didn't get read to, all that kind of stuff that parents are supposed to do. So I think that you might consider that perhaps I was a bulb that hadn't gotten watered yet. I don't know.
It's so interesting, but also I think difficult to talk about intelligence. As I said in my intro, there's so many different ways to think about it. How should we think about it as we have this discussion together?
Well, I think people think of IQ as some sort of abstract thing that geeky psychologists talk about and people that are really good at taking tests. And what you've got to think of is the real world, where you're trying to understand what you're reading in the paper, you're trying to do well at work, you're trying to be a parent, a friend, and understand what's going on. When the reason people can drive a car whereas an animal would not be able to is because that requires cognitive skills that those animals don't have. They're physically able, but they can't figure out what's going on. They can't anticipate. They don't have the mental brain power to do it. So it's something that affects people. Anyone who's ever dealt with a learning disability, anyone who's ever been called stupid, knows how intensely personal and very real this this subject really is.
You talk about something called fluid intelligence. This is something that, that researchers are looking at and studying it, and studying also this notion, this idea of working memory, this sort of practical application of people's cognitive abilities.
So what's really interesting, most people think of intelligence, and especially if you're getting older and they go, I can't remember where I left my keys, or what is the name of that guy, you know, that guy?
The guy with the thing, you
with
know?
With the thing. And so that is long-term memory. So the reason that you can remember your childhood phone number is long-term memory, okay? Then if I give you a random seven-digit number, if I say 249-3850, you can remember that pretty easily. Most people, they might go, oh, what was that again? But a lot of people can get that right away. Now if I ask you, 285-930, give it to me backwards.
I can't do that.
Give it. That's it. That's working memory. Working memory requires you to manipulate information and move it around in your head almost as though you're playing the trick game where is the ball under the cup. You've got to keep track of things as they're moving around in your head. That's why it's hard to multiply numbers together in your head. That's why word games can be challenging. If I say this is to that as that is to this, you might go, what was that again? Because they're relationships and they're moving, and you have to remember one for a moment and push it aside.
Well, what's interesting, and I think people's understanding of intelligence has evolved over the years, the idea that it isn't just sort of fixed. It isn't a fixed number in time, and that's the number that you'll have forever. But that we have experiences, we do things, and that increases, I guess, our cognitive abilities.
Well, this is where the real controversy has erupted over the past, say, 10 years. So researchers had thought and claimed, you know, we've all heard of that book, The Bell Curve.
Yes.
Where he was saying, the two guys were saying that intelligence is fixed. There's nothing much you can do about it. And, oh, by the way, the wealthier people are kind of smarter, and the poorer people are kind of less smart, and we got a big problem in this country, and what are we going to do about it? As if we were all dead stuck with this number, like it's tattooed on you, and you can't do anything about it. So this was a view that there was, unfortunately, a lot of research saying it's really hard to move that number. Mm. It's really hard to move the needle on that dial. And about 10 years ago, people started finding these working memory tasks that were considered just tests of your ability. They started having people practice them. Lo and behold, they got better, and then they could improve at other kinds of working memory tasks, and this seemed to increase their intelligence.
You look at the work, and I don't even know how to say their names, J-A-E-G-G-I.
Her name is pronounced Yaki.
I thought so. And her partner?
Is Martin Bushkull.
But they seem to be the researchers that began to sort of delve into this and created this interesting evolution in our understanding of intelligence.
They took a task called the NBAC, which means if I'm giving you an endless row of letters or numbers, and I keep asking you to press a button every time you hear the one that was said two times ago, or if it repeats now three times ago, so I'm going A, F, Q, A, L, Q. And it keeps going. So you don't just have to remember once. You have to keep going, okay, the L was three times ago. The F was three times ago. The Q was three times ago. And it's keeping moving. It's a maddening task. And they found, though, that people could train on it, could get substantially better. Almost everybody gets better. And they showed that after just 19 weeks of doing this, that people were improved on average 40% in their fluid intelligence.
Wow. Now, you did. You call this a beast of a test.
It's
awful.
And
even just that little sample that you gave seems completely overwhelming to me.
This is one of those things, and what's really interesting about this is, like certain physical exercises, if you watch someone running up and down a stadium stairway and you go, oh, I could never do that. If you watch someone playing the guitar who's really gifted at that, these kinds of things look impossible when you first see them. And guess what? Practice makes perfect, and you can get better and better at these things. And what's very surprising is that all of them seem to improve your fluid intelligence.
And did you feel that person? I mean, you took some intelligence tests, I guess, to have some numbers to look at in terms of before and after.
Well, supposedly, according to the Ravens Advanced Matrices, my fluid intelligence increased by 16%. So
that's significant.
That's pretty good. But I definitely felt better able to do my own research, to report and write my articles. I felt that I was getting better, along better with my family and friends. Just life seemed a little calmer and more sensible, and it's continued to feel that way. You know, intelligence is very much about having your act together, you know, being able to do what you need to do. And, you know, for what it's worth, I definitely experienced that. That's not a scientific study.
No.
But there's, you know, I did identify about 75 published randomized placebo-controlled trials that have shown these effects.
But do you think it's because you were paying attention? I mean, somehow going through these tests got you to obviously pay attention to the tests and then pay attention to the larger world, including people in your family.
There's no question that attention is a fundamental part of this. So people whose mind is wandering, people with attention deficit disorder, these are challenges that really interfere with your ability to handle whatever it is you're looking to handle. So if you can increase your attention, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
And these kinds of techniques have been shown to work with people with ADD. It's been shown to help people with mild cognitive impairment, college students, all kinds of folks.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with science journalist Dan Hurley. We're talking about his new book. It's titled Smarter, and is subtitled The New Science of Building Brain Power. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Meadowbrook School, located in Abington Township, supports WHYY and is an independent, small-by-design elementary school for children in grades preschool through 6th. Education at Meadowbrook emphasizes a lifelong love of learning, encourages both creative and critical thinking, expands a sense of integrity, and inspires students to make a positive difference. To learn more, there is a Meadowbrook Open House on Sunday, January 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. Registration at themeadowbrookschool.org.
This Week in This American Life.
Hospital.
Hello. A man makes a request that goes against both company policy and human nature.
You know the music you have, the holding music? When you put me on hold, it plays it. Could you do that for me for a minute?
loving the music on hold, no kidding, and other stories of being stuck this week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, a high school teacher with fatal brain cancer decides to stop treatment and go on a road trip to find out what kind of an impact he's had on his students' lives as his own is coming to an end. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you're just joining us, Dan Hurley is our guest. He has a new book called Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. And I see we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You made yourself a kind of guinea pig, trying out all these various tests and puzzles and exercise regimens. And one of the things that you did was to get something called transcranial direct current stimulation, something that's actually happening here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I went to the lab of cognition and neural stimulation at the University of Pennsylvania. Roy Hoshi Hamilton runs that, and he was kind enough to hook me up for just a few minutes just to allow me to see what it was like. I ended up going up to a lab at Harvard's neurostimulation lab to actually get trained. And what's really remarkable about this stuff is you're talking about a 9-volt battery, the equivalent of a 9-volt battery. This is nothing that's going to make your hair catch on fire. Not that I have any hair.
I wasn't going to say anything, but that's okay.
But this is not Frankenstein with the volts of electricity coming out and it's alive. This is just it's so mild that
it
seems.
It?
So with some of the devices, the more old-fashioned devices, you feel a slight tingling. It's almost the kind of thing that if you were paying attention to something else, you might not even notice it, or you just might scratch your head there. And then it fades away. With the newer devices, you don't feel anything. You literally, like, they turn it on and you go, is it on?
Wow. Is it a cap?
It's one of them is a cap. The newer devices have caps with EK to be able to record your brain waves, your EKG, so that they can see exactly what's going on while they're stimulating you. Old-fashioned devices, I mean, are nothing more than a couple of wires with a little pad, and they they attach it there. And one goes up on your forehead and the other goes over there. And they're essentially trying to give, you know, neurons communicate electrically, right? All muscles, everything in your body, if there was no electricity, you'd be done for.
Right.
So they're just giving a bit more juice, just a slight level that makes these neurons better able to fire. And you've heard the old line, neurons that fire together wire together. So if they're firing more as you're trying to learn something, apparently it's going to make you better able to learn that. And this has been shown with all kinds of language skills, math skills, learning new words, playing the piano, solving a very difficult problem, all kinds of really improbable things. And I've definitely experienced when I was doing this, seeing a really improbable jump. I was trying to do the end back,
right.
And I was kind of
test you described.
Yeah, I was kind of stuck at the 4-back level, and I did this, and I went boink up to the 5-back, and it just felt like, you know, it was obvious to me.
But is it lasting? I mean, I'm trying to imagine, you know, people lining up and having their brain zapped just to give them that little shove that they might need.
Some of the studies suggest it is lasting. They really don't know. These are early days. Hundreds of studies of TDCS have been published, but to do a study with 300 people and not just do it for 3 months, but then to come back a year later, now you're talking a very complicated, very expensive study. But it's being used with stroke survivors, people who are brain injured, to help them regain movement, to help them regain speech. And obviously, as people are, you know, now they can, they're learning. I saw in the hospital a guy who was relearning how to walk. Now, they wouldn't waste their time on that if they didn't think this is going to have some lasting benefit.
Do you see yourself doing this on a periodic basis, just for your not for research necessarily, but for your own development?
Well, I don't think
mental health.
I don't think that these University of Pennsylvania and Harvard research labs are going to want to have me back in every 3 months just for my
for
own.
For tune-up.
Yeah, these are not approved by the FDA yet, so. Although there have been people experimenting on themselves with kind of homemade devices or retrofitting other devices, it's really not recommended because you do not want to play with your brain in that manner.
Well, indeed. But you also, and I think a lot of people might either be surprised or not so surprised, if we're talking about stimulating the brain, which is
yes.
apparently what's going on here. Things like nicotine, even caffeine, I guess, has a stimulant effect on the brain. Does that make people, quote unquote, smarter?
Nicotine, divorced from a cigarette, okay, cigarettes, bad. Nicotine, kind of good, maybe.
Kind of good, maybe?
Well, they can't find – yeah, I am definitely going to hedge my bet. I don't want to tell anybody out there. I don't want teenagers who are going, oh, this is really good for me. And we all know, you know, the father-in-law who's been sitting in his Archie Bunker chair for 30 years saying, cigarettes haven't killed me yet. But nicotine patches, there's an enormous body of study showing that nicotine is one of the best so-called cognitive enhancers that are out there. If you've ever noticed that people with serious mental illnesses, people who are really depressed, nervous, a lot of people seem to be almost self-medicating with these. And people with, for instance, schizophrenia, one of the worst problems with schizophrenia long term is not the hallucinations, which can be treated with some meds, but the antipsychotics. But there is a lasting, serious cognitive deficit. These people really lose the ability to some of them to really keep their level of their working memory, their fluid intelligence, and things like nicotine kind of amp that up a bit. So I did even experiment on myself with the lowest dose, 7 milligram nicotine patch, which you can get at any pharmacy. And by golly, I found that on days when I was writing this book, when I was going to the New York Public Library every day and sitting down, I really started noticing that on days when I did put it on, I seemed to be really rolling along.
And you don't think it was a placebo or – I mean, there's no way of
– There's no way of knowing.
You're doing it on yourself.
What we do know is scientific studies say this stuff can be of benefit to certain people in certain situations. You know, I am not recommending that anyone go out and buy a nicotine patch. But even on days when I forgot I had put it on, and then in the evening when I'm getting ready for bed, I went, oh, yeah, I had that on. And wait a minute, this was like the most productive day I've had in a week. So,
do you think this in any ways, and I don't want to get too off on a tangent here, though, explains Ritalin or Adderall, which are stimulants?
They are stimulants.
Used for learning disabilities, ADHD, things like that. Do you think if they are stimulants, do you think that some of this research helps to explain why it might work for some people?
Well, you know, there are apparently hordes of college students and young executives who are taking Ritalin and other things, even though they don't have ADD, and they're buying it from their friends on campus. to improve their ability. Now, it definitely wakes you up. It apparently, you know, you can get through the night cramming and you will learn your stuff. But whether they're actually enhancing your intelligence,
yeah,
that is not so clear. In fact, that's probably not happening with that.
Let me reintroduce you. That's Dan Hurley. He's a science journalist whose writing has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and Neurology Today. We're talking about his new book. It's called Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. And he turned himself into a guinea pig and did a number of things. He took tests. He got some pretty intense exercise. He learned to play the lute. And he joins us to talk about some of his experience and some of his findings as well. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. There is a belief that if you do crossword puzzles, you know, keep your mind sort of active with word games, that you can, if not, that you can keep your brain, I guess, or even your memory kind of fresh and I don't know, alive as one ages. Is there any truth to that, do you think?
So anything you're doing is good. Right. And if it's working for you, that's great. The question is, if you want to improve your abilities, is the crossword puzzle going to get you there? And there doesn't appear to be much evidence that crossword puzzles or Sudoku or Dr. Kawashima's brain age, that these things actually have any benefit. Whereas working memory tasks like the NBAC, right, and you can go on soakyourhead.com. You know, my book goes through all of these methods that do seem to work. Learning to play a musical instrument. I'm not talking about sitting there strumming the old Beatles songs that you learned 30 years ago. I'm talking about learning a new musical instrument that really challenges your mind. It's these new things that are stimulating you and bringing you up to a new level, whether it's even physical exercise, going to doing some strength training. These things can make a dramatic difference. Well, I don't know if they make a dramatic difference, but there have been dozens and dozens of studies that show this stuff actually works.
And it's measurable? I mean,
it's absolutely measurable. It's noticeable. One of the most incredible studies was just actually published last week and found that 10 hours of cognitive training that was done in this very large group out in Iowa, they had thousands of people. 10 years later, these are elderly folks, 10 years later, the folks who had been randomized to get the 10 hours of training still showed a benefit after just 10 hours, 10 years later. That's crazy. So the stuff can really be statistically significant. And, you know, I think anyone who's worried about this stuff, it can really make a difference, and it's worth looking into.
Let me ask you about Lumosity. As you said
to
me, it's not luminosity, it's Lumosity. Their promise is your brain just brighter. They promise things like clear and quicker thinking, faster problem solving, increased alertness and awareness, better concentration, sharper memory. You looked into this. Did you find that?
I met with those people. I went out to San Francisco where their offices are. I tried Lumosity myself for 3.5 months. My scores on Lumosity dramatically jumped. If you believed my scores on Lumosity, I was something like twice as smart, which is ridiculous, right? So psychologists who are really seriously studying this area are probably not the biggest fans of commercial enterprises because they don't want it to sound like a kooky late night dietary supplement, sold on the internet. But many of the games that they have are based on the exact same working memory games that have been shown to work. And there's other commercial offerings that do seem to work. You know, I think what's necessary, I tried to serve as a kind of consumer reports of sorting out which one of these has data supporting what they're doing. And I think the ordinary person, that's the problem. It sounds too good to be true. And if you don't know what's really going on, it is hard to figure it out.
So what's the difference between what we've been talking about and just plain old tutoring? This is something that you raise in the book.
So tutoring is basically telling people, you know, I have a six-year-old foster daughter in my home. And she's having some challenges. And we know what the normal routine is in schools. They bring them out. They slow down. They slow down. They give it to you slower.
Yeah.
And you could go your whole school. If you have an IEP, you could spend your whole school time going slower as if that's going to really fix the problem. It's not just spoon-feeding you information that you need. The dream that parents and all of us have, especially with, you know, disadvantaged kids, why are these disadvantaged kids having such a hard time? What on earth can we do? How can we help people? And this kind of cognitive training, helping people actually learn better, is a big deal. It's not just that we're going to spoon feed it to you. We're going to help you be able to absorb it faster.
So some of these mental games that they, we should perhaps include this in the curriculum or have that as part of the education experience so that people are having the kind of mental exercise that would help them?
You know, if this is going to be something more than just helping rich people to do even better than they're already doing, that would be a shame. I think this has got to go out to larger numbers. And as you know, we're at the point where studies have involved, the larger studies have involved a couple hundred people, maybe.
Right.
That's not the point where you trust it. It looks pretty good right now. I'm convinced. You can't have 75 studies all showing benefits and only three showing no benefits and it be bogus. It's not bogus. What you want to know is how can we ramp it up, roll it out, and we need better studies for that, larger studies that answer some of the questions that still remain.
What my takeaway is that exercise is good. Learning new, having new experiences, or
sure,
learning something new, a musical instrument, learning to play a musical instrument, that's probably good as well.
Having your kid play that stupid piano,
really,
is, you know, it's not by chance that parents that want to do everything for their kids might make them go sit there and learn that instrument. It helps.
Well, let's take a very short break. We got a lot of people that want to join our conversation. We're talking with Dan Hurley in this hour of Radio Times. He's a science journalist and the author of a new book called Smarter, a subtitled The New Science of Building Brain Power. We're going to start taking some calls after this very short break. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Orchestra's Tchaikovsky celebration continues as Vadim Gluzman performs the violin concerto. Then Tugan Sokiev conducts Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. Tickets at philorg.org or 215-893-1999. Now, this Thursday and Friday at the Kimmel Center, Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto and Pictures at an Exhibition with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
On the next Fresh Air, why are self-help books so popular? That's what Jessica Lam Shapiro tries to figure out in her new book, Promised Land. Although her father is a child psychologist who wrote about 40 self-help books, she says she had recoiled from self-help her entire life. It's a funny and observant book that takes a surprisingly emotional turn. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Capital Punishment, Skirting the Line Between Justice and Cruel and Unusual Punishment. The story of one doctor's warning that a lethal injection drug would cause agony and horror during an execution in Ohio, and what really happened during that execution. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with science writer Daniel Hurley. His writing has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and Neurology Today. He was featured in the 2013 PBS documentary Smarter Brains, and he's the author of a new book called Smarter, which is what we're talking about. And we're getting calls at 1-888-477-9499. We have Martha Sarah joining us on Radio Times, and go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Marty, and hi, Dan.
Hi there.
Hello.
You know, I have been following this literature on cognitive enhancement, with quite a bit of interest. And I just want to say, I worry that this conversation might be erring a little on the side of the research results being clear-cut, the working memory training in particular, really making people smarter. The working memory literature, I mean, and Dan, I'm sure you've suffered through some of these meta-analyses yourself, it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, a lot of the positive results were from studies that were not well-designed, and I know this is all boring science detailed stuff, but it
not
actually does make a difference,
sure.
in what you can find out. And, there's a couple of reviews that came out in 2012, so pretty recent literature, concluding that it doesn't do much. At least it does. It certainly makes you better at those tasks, which is not surprising. If you practice and practice a certain task, you'll get better at it. But whether it really has kind of more general effects on your intelligence, I wouldn't want to say it does not, but I just think we have to keep an open mind. And I worry that these systems are being pushed really hard. In fact, even on WHYY, we hear about, the system that's developed by neuroscientists,
right.
Devoted to improving intelligence. A lot of weasel words. They don't come out and say it makes you smarter because they can't. They haven't proven that.
Well, Martha, okay, here. No. I'm really glad you called in because I think these are important points, and I want to give Dan Hurley a chance to respond.
Martha, I devote I'm one of those journalists who takes concerns like this super seriously. Rather than just write a perfectly positive, we've got it all figured out book, I devote two full chapters to looking at the extraordinary controversies that have swirled around the field. And I'm very familiar with the meta-analyses that have been published. So here's the deal. The meta-analyses, I don't want to get the listeners lost in it. All I can tell you is that at the end of the day, there are 75, I found, when I finished writing the book, this is as of last summer, months ago, 75 randomized placebo-controlled trials published in peer-reviewed journals that found significant benefits of cognitive training, various kinds of cognitive training, from working memory training, other kinds of computerized training, physical exercise, learning a musical instrument, transcranial direct current stimulation, mindfulness meditation. there's a large body of studies. The number of studies that found nothing, no benefit, three of them, okay? And since then, most recently, there's a group from Georgia Tech that has been really attacking this literature. And they keep telling the same story that that it's all a bunch of baloney. They scored a nice headline on a New Yorker blog calling the field bogus. But they even found lately that working memory training does increase untrained working memory skills, and that's an enormous deal. So,
well,
at this point,
let me just thank Martha Sarah for calling in, and let me pick up on though that something that she said. The question is whether it makes a person smarter. Now, you end the book by saying, having done all these things, you feel smarter, but that's kind of subjective.
So that's subjective. Intelligence is a will of the wisp. What is, for instance, love? Can I make you feel more love? Can I make you feel more happiness? These are very complex constructs, right? So the only way we can measure it is, you know, we've got tests, and we can't just ask, well, are you smarter, as though we would know that. There are measurements that can be done. And what I can tell you is that on these, I took this very seriously. Some of these, a couple studies came out last year that struck fear into my heart. And I said to myself, am I going down a road that I never should have gone down? Is this nonsense? And I was prepared to write a book that said it doesn't work. It's nonsense. I can tell you that, you know, I sleep easy at night. Certainly the notion that it's all a bunch of baloney is ridiculous. That doesn't hold up at all. Even the notion that it's been disproved, quote unquote, is really, I think, for the hundreds of researchers around the world, many of whom I've met, I've been at these meetings where people have had these arguments, and there's only a few diehard skeptics left. God bless them. I want skeptics. I'm a skeptic, and we need that. But to paint this literature as completely lacking in validity is really a distortion. It's a true distortion of the field.
Well, Martha Sarah, appreciate your call to Radio Times. But what I do hear you say, Dan, is that we're just in the beginning here. There's nothing
Absolutely.
Prescriptive going on.
Absolutely.
You've had your own experiences. And there are companies that are overselling their product, so to speak.
I said that. I agree. I think we're in early days. At the same time, I am looking at helping our own child with one of these programs that's offered by a psychologist. I think these things are real, and I'm convinced that there's benefit.
Let me see what Kathy from Merchantville has to say. Kathy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It won't be as ethereal as
the former
call, but as a mother, I'm thrilled to hear about your research and the work, because I've always questioned a moment in time for my daughter who was struggling. She was a very good student, but she struggled with math, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And at the same time, I enrolled her in the Irish step dancing, which is a lot of memorization
Sure.
of different patterns, and she did fairly well at that. And after that, her capacity for the math just exploded to the point where by eighth grade she got the math award and she was advanced in high school, and now she's a successful accountant. So I would tell people this, you know, I wonder if I put her in the Irish dancing, if that had any relationship to the her capability. And I don't think it made her smarter, but I think there was some kind of a jolt that I couldn't explain that made her more successful and therefore more confident. And she proved herself to be, I mean, she was very happy with herself, and she was successful.
So, well, Kath, yeah, first of all, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Dan, it's an interesting story, and you never know with an anecdote, that's not to belittle anything that she said, but proving cause and effect.
Physical exercise is probably the single best proved method, whether strength training or cardiovascular exercise. And I joined one of these crazy boot camp exercise classes that my next door neighbor ran, and I went once to look at them previously and thought that they were all out of their minds. And when I joined it, you know, when you talk about the step dancing, a lot of those complicated movements, the same reason, again, that an animal would not be able to learn how to do a very complicated dance like that, it's you're controlling your body in very much the same way that we control the contents of our mind. And manipulating those numbers is not so different than moving your feet and your arms in these very complicated sequences. They're almost mathematical. And in the same way, music, playing a musical instrument is, you're actually doing math with your fingers, one could say. It really is not just a matter of confidence building. It's literally improving your control of the contents of your mind.
Kathy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me find out what Jack from Haverford has to say. And Jack, go ahead. You are on the air as well. Go ahead.
I am 73 years old, and I have been working crossword puzzles and Sudokus daily for some time, which your guest has just indicated is not particularly helpful. I am interested in preserving and increasing my cognitive capacity. I do work out daily, both weight training and swimming, and am wondering what, if any, other exercises would be recommended to maintain or increase a cognitive capacity in the elderly.
Jack, I have a quick question for you. Do you enjoy doing crossword puzzles and Sudoku?
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, if you're enjoying it, then
yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
And certainly, you know, again, I would imagine that someone doing those things is going to hold on longer than someone who's not doing those kinds of things and is just falling asleep in front of the television every night. I can suggest two things that are completely free. One is chess. My book opens with a story of a young girl who whose parents were immigrants from Mexico, uneducated, third grade educations. Her older brother was failing in school. She was left back. A very optimistic, determined young teacher started a chess class, a chess club, and she ended up going on to getting nationally ranked and getting into a great university, and she absolutely chalks it up to chess. Chess requires the kind of careful thinking that these working memory games demand, and it's really demanding. One good thing to look for in any of these things is it should be hard. It shouldn't be something that you're just casually sitting there doing it. The other thing is this, you can do the NBAC at, it's a free thing online called soakyourhead.com, just like it sounds.
Jack, good luck, and thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me just ask you about another company that you looked at called Learning RX, founded by a guy. He's actually a pediatric optometrist, a guy named Gibson.
Yeah. Learning RX is a little more wacky, okay? It's across the country, and it's in many foreign countries. And it's done like McDonald's franchises. So people open them up, and they're following a very careful guidebook. Now, it looks outrageously, ridiculously like a goof.
Because it's you can raise your IQ points 15, 20.
And they're very, they're expensive. They are expensive. I'll tell you, though, many of the games that they have people do, and it's in person. So instead of getting a computer program and telling your kid to do this rather challenging computer program, and the kid is not wanting to do his homework, but now he's going to do this thing, that's hard to do. And motivation is one of the biggest challenges in this area. Just like we all know that joining a gym would be good, lots of us won't do it. So one nice thing about LearningRx is you go in person, and they one person is leading you, and they're doing games, desktop games, games with bodily movements, and I found that it looks pretty promising.
But does it raise those IQ points as much as
they claim it does? There is very
well. They would, wouldn't they?
They sure would. There is very little objective, independent, third-party data showing that. So if you if it gives you the heebie-jeebies to contemplate spending, say, $7,000 on this,
whoa,
you know, yeah, it can be expensive. But I have definitely met kids who insist and their parents that it made a huge difference. And much of it does seem to be based on the exact same kind of working memory tasks and attention control that all these other games involve.
Well, Dan Hurley, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
The book is called Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. He's a science writer, and his work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and Neurology Today, and again featured in a 2013 PBS documentary called Smarter Brains. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscoe, and thank you so much for joining us.